Common Reason Ministries is celebrating 15 years of sharing life-changing truth, and you're invited to join the celebration. Now through August 31st, 2025, you can order any of our 15-plus books absolutely free, with free shipping to U.S. addresses. But don't wait, this special offer is only available while supplies last. Visit comeandreason.com. Welcome to Designed for More, brought to you by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Join Dr. Timothy Jennings, a renowned expert in psychiatry, neuroscience, and spiritual well-being, as he explores the connections between mind, body, spirit, and relationships.
Hello, and welcome to Designed for More, sponsored by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. I'm Dr. Tim Jennings, and I'm joined today by Annalisa Moretto, one of our therapists here at the clinic, and James Johnson, our chief of chaplains. And today, we're going to be talking about dealing with narcissists. And we received a question that kind of stimulated us to have this conversation. And the question goes, would you please address and provide practical ideas on how to manage and communicate with a narcissist? Are there some general guidelines around how to diffuse the other's anger and demands without reacting with emotion, but at the same time, put in clear boundaries? How do you deal with these people? And as a first principle, I want to start with always, and this is a principle across the landscape of your entire life, no matter what you're doing, always be clear or truthful and accurate on what you're actually dealing with. So my point here is you want to, if you think you're dealing with a narcissist, take a moment, reflect, and evaluate, am I actually dealing with a narcissist or not? And because there is another disorder that gets confused with narcissism. I'm going to tell you about it in a minute. But before I do, let's just go through very quickly, what are the indicators of narcissism? Anybody?
A couple things that come to mind is grandiosity, lack of empathy, inflated self-worth, using others as a servant to get their needs met, hypersensitive to criticism.
Couple things, you're exactly right. That's exactly what it is. It stems actually from deep insecurity. And the deep insecurity is defended against with an external grandiosity and demand or need, expectation. This is all unconscious, not thought about. It's just a way of functioning. It's a personality structure that forms around insecurity and defends against the insecurity by a grandiose or inflated sense of self, this demand that others find them special, expectation or entitlement that they will get preferential treatment, intolerance of not being recognized or validated, envious of success of others, fantasies about their own success, thinking about themselves a lot, this type of thing, arrogant and prideful. This is, and then exploitive of others, lacking empathy, not lacking emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. Okay. In other words, they can read the emotions of others, but they don't care or empathize with others. They read the emotions of the person taking advantage to get what they need.
It's a good clarifying point.
Okay. And I want to differentiate, that's narcissism. Mm-hmm. I want to differentiate narcissism from a form of high-functioning autism, formerly known as Asperger's.
Right.
Okay, and I prefer the name Asperger's than the new term because Asperger's, when you use Asperger's syndrome, immediately that people know you're talking about people with normal verbal skills, and often these individuals have high intelligence too. Mm-hmm. But there's something, if you think about autism have social impairments.
Yes.
And so the Asperger's, often highly intelligent, normal verbal skills, communicates, but they're socially something wrong.
Yeah,
that's what's going on. And some have speculated, and there's some research that suggests this may be true in the Asperger's, that they have a defect in lacking mirror neurons in their brain. And mirror neurons are the neurons that fire when you see someone else crying, hurting, angry, upset, that in your brain they fire and you can empathize or experience or feel or be aware on not just a cognitive fact level,
yeah,
on an intuitive level. Yeah. You can put yourself in their shoes and that leads you, because you're seeing that person's crying or tearful, hurting their feelings, generally with mirror neurons, you actually may soften your response. Oh, I didn't realize. And it's giving you social cues. Now, the Asperger's don't have that. Okay. So they're socially, it's kind of like they are socially blind.
Right.
They don't see the cues. So walking through a crowded room, a blind person doesn't know they're blind. And, mm-hmm. and so they're walking, they're stepping on people's toes. There is no lack of concern for people. Mm-hmm. There's lack of awareness of people. This is a big difference. Mm-hmm. The narcissist has no concern. They're aware and they don't care.
Right.
The Asperger's care, but are not aware.
Exactly.
I see.
You see the big difference?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like I had a student many years ago who could very easily be told by his friends, hey, go tell Mr. Johnson this joke. He'll think it's funny. Mm-hmm. It was socially inappropriate to tell a teacher that joke.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing it to get himself attention. He just wanted to, you know, follow along. He didn't recognize that would be something socially appropriate. I like that differentiation because I would not have thought of that situation as a narcissistic situation.
Mm-hmm. So the narcissist reads social cues,
mm-hmm.
doesn't care about people, has no empathy,
right.
and will use those social cues and actually may even present with their own appearance of empathy and compassion only for the purpose of manipulation and exploitation.
Right.
Whereas the Asperger's are not aware and don't respond and thus often come across as rude, mm-hmm. uncaring, without compassion, blunt, and will often then be accused of being a narcissist. So I want to go through some specific differentiators that you can look for between a high-functioning Asperger's and a narcissist. The Asperger's does not understand social interactions.
Mm-hmm.
The narcissist manipulates social interactions because they understand them.
Mm-hmm.
The high-functioning Asperger's do not do silent treatments. A narcissist will give you a silent treatment.
Yeah.
As a weapon to make you feel bad. Asperger's won't do that. You can actually say no to an Asperger's and mm-hmm. they'll be okay with it. They'll deal with it.
Yeah.
You'll get punished if you say no to a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
Asperger's don't do guilt trips. Narcissists will manipulate you with guilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Asperger's don't sit on their pity pot. Poor, pitiful me. Nobody likes me. Mm-hmm. They don't. Narcissists will often feel sorry for themselves.
Yeah.
Life's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
Asperger's are not envious of the success of others. They don't really even notice the success of others. Mm-hmm. Whereas the narcissist is envious. Asperger's will lack the awareness of the feelings of others and thus are perceived as lacking empathy,
mm-hmm.
but they're not malicious. The narcissist is aware of the feelings of others, lacks empathy, and is malicious. The Asperger's lacks intuition, where the narcissist has intuition and uses it to manipulate. The Asperger's not connected to their own feelings. They don't actually have the same emotional responses to social rejection and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are less manipulated by emotional ploys because mm-hmm. they're not aware,
yeah.
Where the narcissist is hyper-connected to their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be angry if you try to. The Asperger's tends to be kind of one-dimensional, focused on one thing. Mm-hmm. Typically, the problem that they're working on, the goal, the puzzle, the work, the project, they're hyper focused and they're typically very much about solving the puzzle, fixing the problem.
Yeah.
And for them, it's about the external object that they're working with, not the people they're working with.
Right. Okay.
The narcissist tends to flip into different modes. Okay. So again, the Asperger's one-dimensional,
mm-hmm.
pretty constant focus.
Yeah.
The narcissist flips the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Appears very caring, very concerned with people.
Yeah.
Then may turn on them and not care at all. And so you have this kind of on-off type switch with the narcissist. The Asperger's doesn't have a lifestyle of externalizing and blaming everyone, where the narcissist tends to externalize, project, and blame others for any shortcomings, the other person's fault. The Asperger's wants structure and a playbook,
mm-hmm.
where the narcissist wants control. And the Asperger's gets agitated and upset by lack of familiarity or things interfering with the project. The narcissist gets triggered or agitated by things that threaten their ego or diminishes their perceived sense of worth.
Right, my position. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm gonna pause there, and then we're gonna go further. But do you see the first point? It's in a big one. Be sure you're dealing with a narcissist.
Right. Yeah.
It's really critical. I know. In my practice, I've seen people who are dealing. The person they're dealing with is an Asperger's. But because of the rudeness, the bluntness, the apparent lack of emotional response, they get labeled as a narcissist and accused of being, and then treated as a narcissist, which does not resolve or improve things.
Right.
And I even hear with some of the patients that I work with the label of narcissist being thrown out so often. So there's the narcissistic traits and there's narcissistic personality disorder, right? What's the line separating traits versus a personality disorder?
Everybody, essentially every human being has narcissistic traits. Mm-hmm. What is narcissism ultimately at its core? Self-centeredness. Mm-hmm. And every human being born since Adam and Eve struggles with self-centeredness.
Right.
It becomes a disorder when it crosses the line of ability to actually take ownership for one's, mm-hmm. you know, a non-narcissist will have times when they are not empathic. They'll have times when they say ugly words and don't seem to care.
Right.
But they will go and they will feel a conviction and they will repent and they will look in the mirror and they will seek to grow. But they don't have a lifestyle that solidifies as a pervasive pattern of behavior mm-hmm. over multiple landscapes and places of this, what we described earlier as the structure and the way they deal basically everywhere. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
You can have traits mm-hmm. without having a full-formed personality structure.
I'm hearing the takeaway is the accountability, the lack of accountability. In comparison to other diagnoses like a depression or anxiety, that cutoff to depression to major depressive disorder is the functional impairments. But with a narcissist, you don't see the functional impairments. They're functioning quite well.
They're functioning quite well in a job.
Yeah.
They can function quite well in a job. Mm-hmm. They don't function well with people. They don't play well with others. They're not good at creating partnerships where everybody succeeds. Attention needs to be there. So if they build a network, mm-hmm. the network's purpose is to build them up. They need to be the credit taker.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've often been told that the military is a high attractive work situation for narcissists because they want to be the commander. They want to be the one who gets the attention and gets the focus. And I didn't know if that was necessarily true, but it makes perfect sense with what you're saying because a lot of those structures do allow for the social manipulation, for the focus to be, oh, we did great, but I'm the commander, so I did everything for the team.
Yeah, I haven't. There's some of that. I was in the military too.
Right. That's why I was asking.
They're there. Yeah. I also saw a lot of other individuals in the military, people who love their country.
Oh, sure. Not every leader would be that.
A lot of people with the perfectionistic personality structure wants order and structure. The OCPD type persons.
Right.
Okay. But what I always heard is the career that seems to draw the narcissist is the pastors.
Ooh. Yeah, that makes sense.
No, because they get to be the one that every week the whole crowd gets to come to listen to, and their narcissistic need. They're the authority people. They come to them for the problems. And they get to have a certain power and control over the. Mm-hmm. And if it gets really bad, then you end up at so general narcissism that doesn't become antisocial, and a sociopathic malignancy. Mm-hmm. A sociopath is always a narcissist.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not all narcissists are sociopaths.
Okay.
So a narcissist that's not a sociopath can still feel guilt mm-hmm. and can repent if the circumstances are right. And they may struggle with their insecurities and narcissism and still have lots of problems, but they're not malignantly seeking to exploit, mm-hmm. even though their insecurities may lead to exploitation.
I see.
The sociopath malignantly calculates plots and consciously seeks, and they have no care. And so that's the Jim Jones.
Right.
Okay, so it gets way malignant. Mm. So the non-malignant narcissist, in other words, they're not the sociopath. They're the person who's really doing it for the unconscious need, and the sociopath becomes conscious.
Okay,
wow. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Okay. This the typical narcissist would still want to believe they're a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
The sociopath knows they're not. Mm-hmm. You see, there's a subtle difference there. Okay, but so both the narcissist and the Asperger's can react to anger, can react with anger,
Okay.
Okay. And so if you're just looking, they get angry when they don't get their way.
Yeah.
Well, you have to look very carefully. What are they actually getting angry about? The Asperger's generally get angry when something interferes with their ability to achieve the project. If you think about a more primitive, not Asperger's, but a general just autistic, well, they'll get angry if you try to interfere with their ability to put the puzzle together.
Mm. Yeah.
They'll get angry.
Yeah.
But if you actually watch them put in the puzzle together, the typical autistic, and you say, I don't like how you're putting that puzzle together, but you don't interfere, they won't react at all.
They'll just keep going.
Okay. Yeah. And so the Asperger's do not get angry at assaults against their ego. They get angry at things that interfere with their ability to achieve the problem they're working on.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And there's another one. After they have achieved the problem, mm-hmm. they've actually fixed the puzzle, put it together.
Yeah.
There's an anticipation in their world, how they see the world, of that success. Mm-hmm. That's a win.
Yeah.
That's a goal.
Yeah.
They expect praise. Mm-hmm. But the Asperger's will often fix the objective problem.
Mm-hmm.
In ways that are outside the normal boxes of life, and those normal boxes that constrain us from taking actions that fix problems are the emotional boxes of how people will feel if we do it that way. If we do it that way, people won't like it. People won't approve. They might think we're not caring. It's not the norm. It's not the social convention. Yeah, but it would fix the problem. Yeah, but people won't like it. Okay, and so those typically most people won't do it because of the perceived blowback.
Right.
Asperger's will,
right,
and therefore they will do it. They will actually fix the actual problem, whatever it is, but they'll do it in a way that'll be perceived as uncaring, without empathy, rude, not sensitive to the feelings of others. And so when the problem's fixed and they look to get praised, they actually have everybody frowning at them, mm-hmm. and why did you do that? And they will often get criticized not because they did a bad job on the objective puzzle, but because they didn't consider one's feelings. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if this happens over, life becomes very confusing to them,
sure.
and frustrating, mm-hmm. unpredictable, and they end up getting angry.
Right.
But it's not because it's an ego blow. Now, the narcissist, on the other hand, mm-hmm. they get angry not if something interferes with the puzzle, mm-hmm. per se, but if somebody criticizes them.
Mm. It's personal.
For instance, again, the example, hey, I don't like how you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The autistic really won't care.
Yeah.
But the narcissist will.
Yes.
And they'll be upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not about the actual external objective goal. Mm-hmm. It's about how they're being perceived and wanting the praise and validation from people while doing the goal. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So
very much about the heart.
Telling an Asperger's while they're doing something that they're valued and appreciated, while criticizing the way they're doing it, won't have any impact at all. Mm-hmm. But telling a narcissist, hey, we appreciate you. Mm-hmm. We really value you. You bring a lot to the table. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I want to do it that way, though.
Yeah.
That actually will be very impactful to the narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can actually then redirect them,
mm-hmm.
if they know they're being valued, and we call this an ego stroke or narcissistic stroke.
Yeah.
Value them while you redirect them, mm-hmm. will often be able to take the redirection. If you just do the redirection without valuing them, they will, because it's not about them. You're going, it's not about them. It's like, mm-hmm. hey, don't put the napkins here. Put the napkins there. Don't put them on the left side. Put them on the right side or whatever.
Yeah.
That, which is, to you, it has nothing to do with the value of the person. Mm-hmm. To a narcissist, they might get upset. So if you actually say to a narcissist, hey, thanks so much for helping setting the table. Really appreciate you taking the time to do it. Would you mind putting on the left side? Because we really like it on the left side here. And thanks for your help. They'll much more likely to take that without any, but if you just give the direction without the narcissistic valuing, then they'll be potentially angry, get their feelings hurt. See if I, well, forget it. I just won't even help you. I'll just go over here. You do it yourself.
Sounds exhausting.
But this is this is understanding what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
So how else do we deal with narcissists? First, understand what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Observe the person's behavior. Mm-hmm. And let the person's behavior inform you about them, not about you.
Mm.
Do you understand what I mean by that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
If a person is speaking flattery to you,
mm-hmm.
do you just take that to heart? If this person is speaking angrily to you, criticizing, negative, do you just take that to heart? Or Jesus' words, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Mm-hmm. Good man bring forth good. Do you allow the person, do you observe what they're doing, and do you evaluate it? See, if you're dealing with a narcissist, this is very critical. You cannot expect mutually thoughtful and equally motivated, uplifting behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot expect them to engage with, if you're dealing with a narcissist, you cannot expect them to take actions that are actually altruistic and intended to be a blessing to you. If you have that expectation that we're friends, and I'm going to be a friend to them, and I expect them to be a friend to me, mm-hmm. so you can't have that expectation with a narcissist. You have to hear everything with a grain of salt. What are they wanting out of this? So it should. If you're dealing with a narcissist, if you want to actually have a framework, it's much more along the line of a car salesman. What are they trying to get out of this?
Mm.
What are they trying to get out of this? If you approach it from your typical human emotion and empathy, then you will be constantly being taken advantage of, mm-hmm. giving one direct. It'll all, yeah, but they did get, yes. A salesman will mm-hmm. give you a soda when you go in to the lobby and give you a free drive in the car. And they'll give you stuff too. They're not actually giving you anything to try to help your life. Give you a loan with a certain interest rate and mm-hmm. okay, I mean they'll give you stuff, but they're not actually giving you anything.
Right,
that's how it is with narcissists.
Would you say it's true that narcissists gravitate towards codependence?
Well, narcissists are codependents.
Ooh, tell me more.
What is a codependent?
And who needs the other person to give them their own validation of value?
That's what it is.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what narcissists are. Their whole life is oriented around getting from other people what they need rather than having an internal sense of wholeness in relation with God, where the metaphor of Jesus with the woman at the well, the living water wells up from within you and flows over to many. Mm-hmm. That's a metaphor of God's love, truth, grace that we get from our Creator. And when we have a wholeness inside, it flows out. We become a servant to others and bless others. Mm-hmm. Narcissists don't have that. Okay, so they are constantly seeking to take from. They need a validation. They need approval. They need respect. They need attention. So they have codependent. They're always codependent.
Could it be two sides of one coin and how codependency presents in individuals?
If you understand the dynamic of codependency,
mm-hmm.
codependency dynamic is always somebody seeking to get some internal need met from an external source
mm-hmm.
other than God.
Yeah.
So the narcissist, you may be only seeing the codependent of the needy, helpless codependent, not the grandiose codependent. Mm-hmm. And so the narcissist codependent will identify and find the insecure,
mm-hmm.
needy codependent. But that is actually the other side of narcissism. Mm-hmm. So in the theorists, if we might as well talk about these, mm-hmm. The narcissist you see described in the DSM and the one we already described here today is built from the framework of one of the psychoanalysts called Kernberg. And Kernberg described the grandiose narcissist. The narcissist who had all the grandiosities, inflated self-esteem, they're the sun that everyone else in their world
mm-hmm.
must rotate around. Okay, all the attention has to rotate around this individual. They have to be the primary one being affirmed and validated by all the other people in their orbit of their world. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's the Kernberg narcissist. Kohut, a different analyst, described another narcissist. And that's the person who has, instead of the grandiose, I'm wonderful, it's all about me. When I walk in, everyone should part and I should go to the front of the line because they recognize I'm more special or my needs are more or my time is more valuable. I shouldn't have to wait in line. That's the Kernberg narcissist we just described. The Kohut narcissist is the opposite. It's the one who walks in and says, I'm so inadequate. I'm such a loser. I'm so bad. I should be at the back of the line. No one should ever notice me. And this is the person who's walking when they're walking in the store and two strangers walk by that they have never met. And those two strangers giggle. This person goes, oh, they're probably laughing at my sweater. Okay. And they have no idea what they're laughing at. But in other words, what did they just do? They inserted self into the center. So self still is in the center of everything and everything revolves around it. But instead of everything revolving around in a grandiose way, it revolves around in a deflated and demoralized way.
I see.
That's the Kohut narcissist. And those two will often get together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because this one is going to be able to exploit that one for their need.
Yeah.
And this one will feel, well, this wonderful, strong person who on the externals looks like this wonderful person values me.
Yeah.
But it's a codependent enmesh relationship.
Yeah.
Does that help?
No, that does.
Okay. So my first point is, after you know you're dealing with a narcissist, mm-hmm. yes, this is a narcissist, then if you're going to interact with them, have a relationship with them, you have to go into what we call observer mode, not interactive mode. Observer mode is you're like the ghost of Christmas future in Dickens' story, where you're observing the interaction. In your mind, you're observing, not responding relationally, emotionally, like you would in a mutually rewarding relationship. And so you're observing, okay, what do they want out of this? Just like you might, you would probably be doing that. You'd be observing your car salesman. What's he doing? What's he wanting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in observer mode, other person's behavior is informing you about them. What is it they need? Okay. And then the narcissist does not cooperate well. In other words, any form of cooperation is going to be for an agenda, a goal of the narcissist. Do you want to participate in that goal? You'll be constantly monitoring yourself where you work or don't work with that person.
It sounds to me like you have to be hyper-vigilant in that relationship, which just sounds emotionally.
If you don't want to be taken advantage of, you will be, yes. And if you're doing this well, you won't maintain the relationship. Not that you end it, they won't stay with you.
Ah, I see.
If you're doing this well, they'll leave and find someone else. Because you will close the doors to their inherent manipulative attempts, and it will be frustrating for them, and they will accuse you of not caring, of not loving them. Now, if you are in a relationship that they won't flee for, maybe you're married to them, maybe they have some narcissists married, have a internal value of being a virtuous and righteous Christian man, and therefore they can't leave because the rules won't allow them, and that would be an attack on their ego because you, the spouse, has not had adultery, so they have to stay. This type of an approach can bring that narcissist to the point of at least modifying their behaviors, if not beginning some introspections.
Yeah.
Okay? I've got more, but I want to open it up to you guys.
Well, and you may have just answered, I guess, the question I was thinking of. You know, you got a person that, you know, they're dating, they're getting to know somebody. They might be attracted by the charisma and the confidence of the narcissist and the apparent success. I mean, this is a person that walks in the room and, man, people notice. I mean, because they've got this kind of a personality. But then as they get serious and they realize, wow, this person's a narcissist. And so then maybe they come to a counselor, a therapist, and a psychiatrist and say, you know, I was wanting to marry this person, but I'm recognizing they're a narcissist. Is there hope for that kind of a relationship? Or what would you say to them
if the person is actually have narcissistic disorder, not just some traits? Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's make that distinct.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Traits, lots of hope. Disorder, there is no hope as long as they still function as a narcissist. Wow. There is no hope because by definition, they are not capable of empathy and actual altruistic love. The only hope for the narcissist is the same hope for all sinners.
Mm-hmm.
And there is hope for the narcissist. Right. But that we weren't talking about
No.
We're talking about hope for that relationship
yes.
with a narcissist who's remaining a narcissist. Right. No. Yeah, you can have a relationship with that person, a relationship. Mm-hmm. You cannot have a healthy, godly relationship with
right.
them. Healthy relationships require healthy people. And by definition, a narcissistic disordered person is not a healthy person.
That's huge. Okay.
So you can have a healthy relationship with them. You can have a dysfunctional relationship with them, but not a healthy relationship with them.
Wow.
The hope for the narcissist as the individual is the same hope for all sinners. Mm-hmm. It is a genuine falling on the rock, Jesus Christ, and breaking your ego, surrendering self, and being reborn with a new spirit.
Right.
And then a daily battle with self. I die daily.
Mm-hmm.
Every day, the narcissist person who has narcissism has to every day start their day, every day, mm-hmm. surrendering self. And being empowered and indwelt by the Holy Spirit and living a life of animating motivation of love and trust, not fear and selfishness. The prime drive to a narcissist, the motivation to action is fear and me, fear in me, fear and selfishness. That's the motivating drive we inherited from Adam, the spirit of fear. And so the true convert is not a cognitive convert. This is, and the problem with you know, Christian narcissists is they convert cognitively, mm-hmm. they convert denominationally,
mm-hmm.
they convert systematically,
right.
but their hearts never change.
Mm-hmm.
And so they learn the system of religious dogma, mm-hmm. religious theology. And you will find some of these narcissists in your church being elevated to positions of leadership because they, if they're intelligent, they will learn the ins and outs of the system and the rules, and they will become very proficient in communicating those rules.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they will not actually have the motive of love and building up. They have a motive of themselves being exalted and recognized. You know what I'm saying?
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So did that answer that question?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
On the topic of relationships, let's say the person's partner, the narcissist, is in therapy. Are there risks in therapy where they're learning how to model and demonstrate empathy, but it's not authentic and genuine?
Risk for the narcissist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, are you saying, is there a risk to the healthy partner of the narcissist getting in therapy that the therapy may teach them how to be a better manipulator?
Yeah, because 100%. The therapist is empathetic.
100%. Yeah. And in fact, general psychiatric treatment of a narcissist mm-hmm. can often do that because general psychiatric treatment does not lead them to conversion in Jesus Christ. It teaches them how to modify their behaviors to be more socially acceptable mm-hmm. so they can exploit more without being offensive to people. Mm-hmm. So from a Christian worldview,
mm-hmm.
the goal is not simple behavior modification for social success. It is heart transformation for eternal success.
Right.
And so that will require the narcissist being allowed in their world to reap what they sow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some might say, you made your bed, lie in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But the narcissists generally are very good at often getting one of two things. Because of the way the world is, well, they're human, we're human, mm-hmm. we all make mistakes. And thus we will suffer consequences, whether those are innocent mistakes or willful evil. Those choices will have negative consequence in our life, whether it's guilty conscience, whether it is relational brokenness.
Right.
And the narcissist will have those too. And those experiences are allowed and designed by God, actually, to alert us something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't right.
Yeah.
The pain of touching a hot stove alerts you that that's damaging to pull your hand back.
Mm-hmm.
The pain of dysfunctional behavior is designed to alert you something's wrong. So that you will then seek what's wrong, learn what's healthy, mm-hmm. and healthy is always in harmony with God.
Right. Yeah.
But the narcissist will often fail to experience that healthy direction for two reasons. One, they are good at enlisting other people to deliver them from their consequences, mm-hmm. insulate them, protect them, accept blame for them.
Right.
So it's not their fault. And they are very good at externalizing and blaming. It wasn't my fault. Denial, distortion, externalization, and blame. Mm-hmm. The narcissist does this very well. So yes, this bad thing happened, but it was only because of this. And this is where people in relation with narcissists have to be very clear and stay out of and stop trying to fix the bad decisions narcissists are making. Because if you assist with godly assistance in the middle of a narcissist agenda, when it goes wrong, they won't look at their contributions and say, what I did was wrong, I've learned something. They will look at your interference and your attempts to help mm-hmm. as messing it up. And if you did, they'll blame you. If you'd have stayed out, it wouldn't have gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
A metaphor. The narcissist in the kitchen, they're trying to make a cake. And you're a 5-star chef,
mm-hmm.
A mature Christian in our metaphor. And you see them as they're trying to make a cake that they're putting in, they put in flour, but then they added some motor oil. And then they put in some bolts, and then they put in, a whole bag of baking soda,
mm-hmm.
and you can tell it's going to be terrible.
Yeah.
And if you recognize that this is not going to be good, and you try to help them by, let's put a little sugar in that, sweeten it up. If adding the sugar that they forgot,
mm-hmm.
and the 2 eggs that they forgot, which is appropriate to the recipe,
mm-hmm.
to the motor oil and the bolts. Is it going to actually cause it to turn out well?
No.
And then when it doesn't turn out well, it's horrible. Will they actually take ownership? Or they say, this is your fault. You put this in here. Mm-hmm. If you'd have left me alone, it would turn out great. Mm-hmm. This, you have to understand this is what you're dealing with. You've got to stay out of their decision-making. Mm-hmm. You got to stop influencing them. Let them make their choices. And then when they do and they crash and burn, you say, what'd you learn?
Yeah.
That was going to be one of my questions is how early does this develop in a person? I mean, I know we're all born selfish. We're all born with those traits. We mentioned those earlier because of our sin sickness of selfishness. But if you're a parent, how soon should you start looking for this in your children?
So the self-centeredness is there in every child.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't start looking for narcissism in early childhood.
Okay.
Okay. We in the mental health community don't believe that the personality disorders actually solidify until later in life because the brain remains pliable and changeable.
Okay.
And we don't finish maturing our brain till 25. So certainly not up until the late, adolescent period, which is our 20 to 25.
So like even in high school, you wouldn't say, this person's a narcissist.
No, I wouldn't give the diagnosis yet, but you could say they're really shaping up into one.
Okay.
But because the brain's still pliable, if they get really healthy interventions, it can bring them to repentance and can bring them to actually go down a different trail where they don't end up narcissists still.
Right. Okay.
But you want to be very careful, prayerful, and mm-hmm. thoughtful about the interventions you bring into their life. And this is where the Lord disciplines those he loves, and you bring loving discipline in to help them learn. And sadly, in our society today, there are many things that are reinforcing narcissism rather than helping people learn. Mm-hmm. Your feelings are truth. It's your truth and my truth. This is all.
Or for validation.
Sure, yeah.
What is the environment, the perfect storm in developing those traits that eventually turns into a personality disorder?
I don't know that there's a perfect storm. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's true. I think that human experience is so wide and varied, and our genetics are so wide and varied, and our upbringing so wide and varied that there's a wide range of things that can result in that. The general landscape, though, is lack of healthy love and lack of healthy discipline.
Healthy love and discipline. Okay.
I mean, those are the general things. Mm-hmm. And so healthy love would include, raised in homes without genuine connection to Jesus Christ. Now, you notice I said genuine connection. Because many narcissists come up in homes that are Christian
homes.
Indoctrinated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Indoctrinated Christian homes do not protect from narcissism. In fact, they might inflame it.
Sure.
Look at the Pharisees who crucified Christ.
Mm.
They were the church of God for that time, right, with the inspired record and all of the blessings of the Lord. That was the only authorized church on earth in Jesus' day.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who killed him were clear narcissists.
Yeah.
Isn't that true?
No, I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, why? How could that be? So, because they didn't actually have a connection with the Spirit of the Lord. Mm-hmm. And if you raise people on the law of the Lord, disconnected from the Spirit of the Lord, you're probably going to raise a narcissist. Because what you're doing is you're raising them on the spirit mm-hmm. of fear and selfishness, and teach them to defend against the spirit of fear and selfishness through law-keeping, rule-keeping, religious ceremony, and forms and figures, which only solidify your defense of self. It is the exact opposite of the surrender of self, die to self, and be reborn with a new life, a new animating energy, a new motive. Okay? And so, yes, I think a religious upbringing that teaches religious conformity and obedience to rules and rule keeping and ceremony without teaching the reality of what those things are designed to point to, which is a relationship with the Creator for a rebirth experience, can lead to developing narcissism. But you can do that without a Christian, that same process. Any type of, you know, your value and worth is in what you do, do this and you're good, condition, what we call conditional love.
Yeah.
Same type of thing, neglect, and then the defense against that, the hurt is narcissism, abuse, defense against that can be narcissism if it's not other personality disorders.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think,
so lack of love, yeah. healthy love, and healthy discipline is, mm-hmm. is the framework where you're going to cause that to thrive.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Can anyone describe what gaslighting is?
It's where you twist the situation to make the other person feel like they're the reason something happened. You know, as opposed to like, if you wouldn't have, you know, like you said with the cake, you know, if you wouldn't have done that, this would have been fine, you know, or you make me so angry, I can't help
but. So it's a form of the blame game.
Yes.
Distort their reality.
Yeah.
Distort their perception.
And making them believe something that's not true.
Yes.
You know, this sounds like the modern media.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, constant false narratives, taking a fact, twisting it to be something exactly it's not.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mostly peaceful protests. When they're having terrible riots and destruction, this kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just describing objectively what's going on, you don't even have to qualify it. You can just quantify it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There were 7 buildings burned, 48 cars were destroyed, by bricks and gas. You're not interpreting, you're just describing, which is what the news actually used to do.
Right.
News used to do that. They'd give a report of what was happening. And what happens now in our society is everything is twisted and through interpret with qualities associated to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's mental manipulation. And narcissists do this.
Right.
Narcissists will take and try and twist the story.
Don't be so sensitive.
Mm-hmm. In a way that is attempt to make the other person be blamed for the narcissist's behavior. If you wouldn't have said that, I wouldn't have got mad.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see this. If you don't wear that red hat, I wouldn't have thrown that brick at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen this all the time.
Sure.
Shift the blame.
Mm-hmm.
Shift the responsibility.
Okay, so our society, there's a segment of our society that is pumping this kind of ideology out. It is counter to truth. So narcissists sustain narcissism by evading truth and love.
Mm-hmm.
They evade it, deny, distort, externalize.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what evil does.
Right.
Evil evades truth. Mm-hmm. You will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Any thoughts on how the faith community could help?
Yeah, you hit something really, really heavy that I think is a big struggle in at least American Christianity. We had a massive shift in the early 1900s away from discipleship that brings in that heart and that transformation through Holy Spirit that creates real change, as opposed to conversion, which changes to, did you follow the rules? Are you now part of this group? So you meet the standards by doing A, B, C, and D. And one of the best things we can do is to actually bring in that process of bringing in the transformation of the Spirit, not just, oh, if you're a good Christian, you follow these rules. You go to church so many times, you do all these rituals, and actually involving more of authentic heart change through Holy Spirit instead of just conformity to rules.
How about accountability in the church?
Yeah.
What's that like? Yeah, do narcissists get held accountable in the church?
No.
I've seen narcissists, I've seen situations where narcissists abuse their spouse.
They thrive.
I've seen situations where narcissists abuse their spouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the spouse has gone to the pastor. Pastor actually supports the spouse that's being abused and counsels the narcissist. Mm-hmm. But the narcissist keeps abusing. Eventually, the spouse is being abused verbally and sometimes physically.
Yeah.
After years of abuse, leaves and files for divorce. And the church disfellowships or disciplines the victim, the one who's being abused for leaving because the narcissist hasn't had a sexual relation with somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen that.
What do you say about that?
What's
our explanation as to why a church would do that?
I would say it's a misunderstanding of the way God's design laws operate, that we're making it, oh, this is all about
rules.
Yeah.
So there's a rule, and the rule is you can beat and abuse your spouse and still maintain a marriage in a godly way, mm-hmm. basically is what they're saying. Yeah. Function. As long as you don't have sexual contact with another person that's not your spouse, you can abuse them, and we don't support the abuse, but it's not a grounds for ending the relationship.
Right.
Mm.
What do you think about that?
It's exactly what Jesus was, teaching against in what we call the Sermon on the Mount. You've heard it said, but this is what I'm saying because you're looking at it legalistically rather than internally in your heart.
He's saying if you don't take the act, but you lust in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And adultery at its root is betrayal of trust.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And when you marry somebody, you are giving your hearts, bodies, souls, basically, to each other, to love and trust, to cherish, forsaking all others till death do you part. My heart is now in your hands to protect and cherish, and yours is in mine. And adultery is betraying that trust, exploiting and abusing that heart or that soul, rather than protecting and uplifting. Isn't that basically what it is?
Yeah.
What is happening in the heart, mind, spirit, soul of the narcissist who's abusing his spouse? What's happening to him? If he's verbally and physically abusing his spouse, what's happening to him? He's not cheating. He's not sleeping with another, but he abuses her. Is he becoming more like Christ? Is he hardening his heart, searing his conscience, warping his character? If the wife is a godly wife and loves her husband and maybe stays and godly, tries to set boundaries, prays for him for a period of time, doesn't want to abandon him. Mm-hmm. But if she actually loves him and he persists down this trail, what does love call her to do? If she loves him and doesn't want to see him completely destroy his soul, doesn't she have to set a boundary and say, I cannot stay in a marriage with you because I love you too much?
That's right.
Because I recognize what you're doing. It's not only not loving me. It's not only not witnessing how Christ treats the church. You're destroying your soul. And so this is boundary setting. So I, in governance of myself, choose to remove myself from this home and this relationship. And if she loves you, she might say, I'm going to give you a period of time to get into therapy, to get anger management classes, to surrender your heart to the Lord and repent and give you an opportunity to reconcile this marriage.
Yeah.
Now, what generally happens at this point is that the narcissist will go through a period of external pro forma behaviors to try to win her back.
Mm-hmm.
But if it becomes clear she has discernment and he hasn't actually had a heart change and she won't come back, then he will eventually vilify and attack her and go find another.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking about, now that I've got this perspective of what you've been sharing with us, I'm wondering how many times has, the narcissist gone to the pastor and manipulated the story and the narrative, and that leads to the pastor not being able to hold him accountable.
100%. Yeah.
That's smear campaign of his wife.
So where does forgiveness play in the relationship of dealing with a narcissist? The narcissist is not repentant. The narcissist is self-justifying. The narcissist is blaming you falsely. Mm-hmm. You've been wronged. You've been mistreated. You've been verbally mistreated, maybe smacked. And the narcissist, but it's your fault because I asked you to have the car washed while I was on my trip and you didn't get the car washed. You deserve that smack. I didn't do anything wrong. Okay. Or whatever it was, criticism. So the narcissist is not repentant. Where's for the person who's being mistreated by the narcissist? Maybe it's not a physical smack. Maybe it's a verbal smack, calling you names, put you down. But it's still wrong. Where's forgiveness play in here?
Well, what forgiveness is not, it's not saying that you're excusing it or you're justifying it. Forgiveness isn't for the other person. It's for yourself, your heart, your relationship with God.
Excellent. So forgiveness, if you've been wrong, when you forgive the wrongdoer, you're relieving your heart of bitterness, resentment, anger. Okay. So whether the person repents or not, the mature person forgives in their heart. Jesus forgave those who crucified him.
That's right.
Because you're not going to let their evil be implanted in your heart and grow into the fruit of bitterness, hate towards them. So you forgive to keep your heart pure. After forgiving, like Christ did, does forgiveness mean that you can trust them?
No.
No.
And if you forgive them and love them and they're doing something that is destructive to their soul, it's what we just talked about, you forgive them and hold them accountable. You forgive them and reflect it back at them. I forgive you. I'm not mad at you, but what you're doing is not only harmful to me, it's harmful to you. Yeah. And because I love you, I can't sit silently by while you behave this way. There's something wrong. You've got something wrong in your heart, and I want you to have that. Yeah, I love you so much. I want it removed. I mean, you can't be at peace at yourself. You can't look in the mirror and say, I'm so proud of myself. I just cursed my wife and called her ugly names. It must torment your soul. And if it doesn't, then they may not be a narcissist. They may be a sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then the only real answer is to leave.
Right.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Any closing comments on our discussion on narcissism?
I guess one of the concerns I have is, you know, how, you know, you obviously Jesus said, you know, a tree by its fruit. So over time, but the hard part of the manipulation is how does that loving spouse, you know, how many times, you know, I know Jesus said you forgive unlimited times, you know, but the idea of how many times do you seek reconciliation with the relationship before you say, nope, you say you're sorry, you're giving all these words and you're seeming emotional, but your actions aren't changing over time. You know, it's hard. They're going to have to decide where they put that boundary and to say, no, I'm no more.
Right, right. So, but that's the point that I think thank you for clarifying that. Your forgiveness is perpetual because you're not going to become embittered, but where you draw the boundary of trust is the question. And the boundary of trust is basically where you let them reside in your heart and your life.
Right.
And so you may have married this person and then discovered this is going on. And then you have to push that boundary back. I can't trust you.
Mm-hmm.
I love for you. I love you and want your welfare, but I can't trust you. So you actually and I can't live together right now because you're untrustworthy.
Mm-hmm.
You are untrustworthy. And they may not hear that. They may get enraged. How am I untrue? Because my heart is not safe with you.
Yeah.
You don't have the maturity to look in the mirror and take ownership over your shortcomings and deal with what causes them in Christ to become a new man. When you can do that, we can move forward. None of us are flawless or perfect in the sense of never making mistakes, but the mature are those who are able to take feedback, look in the mirror, take ownership over their shortcomings, update their process in Christ, and diminish the recurrences of those shortcomings. They mature over time. They grow. Mm-hmm. That's the mature. Mm-hmm. And you can have a healthy relationship with those people. But the narcissist can't do that. The narcissist denies, distorts, externalizes, does not learn, always finds someone else to blame, and the same patterns persist. Mm-hmm. They're not safe. They're not trustworthy. And only a fool would stay in that relationship under the blind trust of, well, he said he was sorry.
Exactly.
Okay? That's foolish. You're not helping you, and you're actually colluding with the destruction of the soul of the person you claim to love. That's what's going on there, Dynamics.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
Good.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope this program was helpful to you. If you have questions, send those into designformore.net, designformore.net, and we'll see you next time.
Come and Reason Ministries is celebrating 15 years of shared life-changing truth, and you're invited to be part of it. Now through August 31st, 2025, all our books, magazines, and children's resources are absolutely free, with free shipping anywhere in the U.S., whether you're ordering for yourself or to share with your family, church, friends, or community, this is the perfect time to stock up and spread the message. But hurry, this special anniversary offer is only available while supplies last. Thank you for joining us on Designed for More, brought to you by Come and Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts for more inspiring content.